Hey guys, it's Nick. I'm here talking to you. This is the fourth anniversary episode of the podcast, I guess. It's unofficial, but sometime around here, 4 years ago, I decided to press record on a microphone and start talking to people. And then I kept doing it. And 4 years later, here we are. I'm glad I could explain to you how anniversaries work. It's really strange, sort of looking back and thinking about, you know, how and why this started and why I decided to do this. And now it's sort of like I've always done it. I don't really remember a time when I didn't. And I will tell you, there was at least, 4 years where I was wanting to do a podcast and I didn't really do it. And I don't know why. I think I was sort of scared of screwing it up out of the gate and it not sounding good or being good or not really knowing what it should be. I think I have a problem with attempting things until I know sort of the ins and outs of all of it, and it scared me. So one day I was like, this is dumb. This is what it should be. Me talking to my friends that I know in Nashville who are creative and, you know, and meeting some new people along the way. And, you know, it's been really great. It's been really fun. And you've been listening to it. So it can't be all bad since you make only good choices in your life. So what you're about to hear is a few clips, snippets, if you will, of the first four episodes. The first one with Andrew Osenga, who's been on a couple times now. The second one with Stacey Lance, which was actually the first one that we recorded. The second one is with Emily Deloach. The third one's Arthur Alleygood. The fourth one's Stacey Lance. And that's the one we recorded the first time. And I literally was like, if I'm going to do a podcast, I'm just going to do it now. So I called Stacey and I was like, can you come over and let me talk at you through a microphone? And I didn't really know what I was doing. Neither of us did, but, you know, we made it through it. And so I backlogged a bunch of episodes, kind of saw if it was going to be something I wanted to put out, and I did. And so here are a few snippets of sort of the early days to kind of give you a little bit of perspective of what it was like then and how maybe it's different and or similar to now. And, you know, a lot of these episodes, for whatever reason, aren't on iTunes anymore. I guess they kick them off after a certain amount of time. So enjoy clips of the early days of the podcast. Bang. This is it. We're doing it. Welcome to the first episode of Who Writes This Stuff, a podcast of conversations with creative minds and the bodies that are attached to them. I am singer-songwriter, now podcast host, Nick Flora, coming to you live on tape from my house in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm really excited since I've had this idea to start a podcast for a while now, but never really knew what it should be about, and things should be about other things, I think. It's a personal philosophy. Then while I was making my last record, Hello Stranger, available on iTunes, and having many, many conversations kind of before you start that process, dealing with the creative process and songwriting and kind of all of these things that are needed to make a record, with the musicians involved as well as the producer of the record itself, it hit me that this should be what the podcast is about. I think this is interesting and other people might find it interesting as well. So it's kind of a veritable behind the music of sorts with some of the creative minds I've come in contact with over the years. So starting off the first episode of Who Writes This Stuff is my conversation with singer, songwriter, producer Andrew Osenga, who you may know from his involvement with bands like The Normals and Cabin's Call, as well as his solo stuff. Here is my conversation with Andy Osenga. Yeah, I remember going with you to, it was in Nebraska, and you're like, let's stop in here. And we stopped.
Oh, that's what, yeah, I was really into Jazzmaster. I played that Jazzmaster for like an hour.
You remember that? That was like 4 years ago. I remember going in there and you just being like, let's something. And that guy, the guys in there were kind of like that, you know, like you could tell they worked there, you know, for years. And
yeah, all these people.
They had that guitar store condescension kind of thing, passive aggressive condescension.
Yeah, it's like, can you need me help you plug that in? Like, I can handle it.
Which button do I push?
Which one makes me so like Steve Vai?
Now, how many necks of a guitar do I need? Like, two or three? I mean, I know I need more than
a two-neck guy.
I need more than one because we're in the 20th century. Mm-hmm. It's still the 20th century, right? It's not?
Okay. Yeah, I like my guitars like I like my women. Two or three necks.
You grew up in Illinois.
I did.
Central Illinois, which is known as the mecca of
insurance. Corn. Insurance, I think.
Insurance?
Yeah. State Farm. Well, their headquarters. They employ like over half of my hometown.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, growing up in Central Illinois, normal, specifically, mm-hmm. growing up in kind of the middle of nowhere, as far as a lot of things go, mm-hmm. what first got you interested in music?
My parents are really musical. My dad, both my parents have been like music teachers at certain points. My dad was a high school band teacher, and my mom teaches elementary school music. So, like, they're very musical. That my dad's the choir director at the church on the country, and makes them sound more bumpkin than they are when I said it that way. But yeah. but the church is really in the middle of cornfield. Yeah, so there was always music in our house, but it's not the kind of music that I make.
Yeah,
my dad like was really into big band music and marching band music.
Mm.
And that, so, you know, brass.
John Philip Sousa was like a god in your house.
Oh, man, yeah. And Gershwin. My mom's really into Gershwin and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, I was raised on, like, Twyla Paris and Sandy Patty. And, you know, I remember, like, getting a Stephen Curtis Chapman CD and it being like, all right, we're going to kind of roll the dice on this one, yeah. You know. And
this guy's a little too hardcore.
I know. He has long hair and Toby Mac rapping on this. Playing like Bonnie Raitt, and you know,
there's probably some early morning DJ who was anti-pop music who just wanted to play what he liked.
But I mean, like, those were huge hits. Like, those were big songs. Like, those were pop songs. Like, mm-hmm. Annie Lennox, Walking on Broken Glass. Like, that to me, whenever I hear that, I'm 12 and I'm delivering papers. Like, but I didn't know who anybody was. I didn't know any names. I just sort of knew this. I would learn those songs, and they were the same songs every week, pretty much. To me, my favorite year of recorded music is 1991. Like, when I just think of all the records that came out that year, it's like all those records, which I still love all of them. And like Pearl Jam's 10 came out that year, and
I was
like,
oh wow, I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah, like literally like 3 or 4 of my top 10 records came out in the same year.
Do you and they attribute were all it on the radio. To that? Do you attribute it?
I mean, I'm sure just there's genuinely good records. I'm sure there's. I mean, they are. I mean, to me, Act Like Baby's the best record that's ever been made. Right. Peter Gabriel's Us is like. Is up there, like it's a top 10, you know. Pearl Jam's 10 is a top 10, and so I mean, those were the it's but so I mean, some of that's I don't know, chicken or the egg, probably, but like I don't listen to those records now and think, oh, I'm 12. Like, I listen to those records, I'm like, man, that's so good. I just want to write one song as good as anything on Act Tongue Baby. So, but you know, I think that was the first place where I sort of got a taste of that, and I just loved it. And I mean, like, the creative writing class, things that I learned in that class, I'm verbally using on a weekly basis with my clients as a producer. I mean, just like,
wow,
little like nuggets like show, don't tell, don't rhyme for rhyme's sake, and avoid cliche, and you know, I mean, just like the super basics of like how to write that if I hadn't been taught, I wouldn't know, you know. And I mean, but I use every day. I mean, and watching people come in who've write hundreds of songs and don't sort of know these basic things of like, oh, like the reason these songs aren't connecting is because, like, there's simple things that you can do to sort of help get, you know, the song is just a vehicle for communication. You know, it's the envelope that the message goes in. You know, and so what you want to do is you want to make that envelope, you know, as you like, you don't want that to be a hassle. Like,
oh yeah.
Like, you just want it to be I want to open that. And then, like, you don't want to make, you want to, what you have to say to just come through. And for the story to just be immediate, you know, and for the emotion to be immediate. Even though you might want people to do some work as they're listening and lead them some, you know, but the writer's in control of what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer's the one who sets the tone and says, okay, here's the pace we're going here. Here's where we're going to start the story. Here's where we're going to end the story. Here's the point I want you to get. And, like, that doesn't have to be an accident. Somewhere near the river, all the Kankakee's waters,
Speaking of chats, let's not waste any time getting into mine, Miss Emily Deloach.
This isn't going live, is it?
Yeah, live on the internet.
No.
We're going to take callers in a minute. Well, Emily Deloach.
Nick Flora.
Good to see you.
You too.
What, how have you been?
I've been doing pretty great.
Great?
Just had some coffee.
Yeah.
This morning. Cheerios.
We are sort of neighbors.
Yes, it took me like 3.5 minutes to get here.
Yeah, I tell people all the time that whenever people ask me if I do you know Emily, and I say yeah, she's my neighbor, but not really, because we technically live off the same. You live on the street that I live off of, so
thoroughfare.
That's ooh. Mm-hmm. Are these the type of words that you're gonna throw out throughout this?
I try to incorporate words like thoroughfare into all of my songs.
Okay.
Yeah. I like to write a lot about transportation.
I've noticed that you use thoroughfare a lot. That's actually my first question. But I think to call somebody your neighbor, you have to be able to walk to their house, and I'd be a little scared to walk to their house.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't recommend
that. There's some areas in between our houses that scare me a little bit. Even at like 8 in the morning.
We'll call it that. We'll say it that way.
Yeah. No, yeah. Oh yeah, there's no sidewalks. So, what's Emily Deloach about? Where are you from? Alabama?
Yeah, I'm from Birmingham, Alabama. As my friend Ben Moon calls it, the big salty ham. I think that was Ben Moon. That might have been Ryan. Sorry if I misquoted that.
Yeah, we'll have to fact check that.
Okay.
I'll have my intern check on it. What's the... Birmingham, what's in Birmingham?
It's a pretty big city. Industry.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's Pittsburgh. You can't fool me. That's not.
No, I really do think it's called the Pittsburgh of the South or something like that. Yeah. Sloss Furnaces.
Do you know what the sister city is?
The sister city of Birmingham?
Do they have one? You know, when you go into towns and it's like Cleveland, Tennessee. Well, that's a bad one because Cleveland's ghetto. It doesn't. But you know, where it says like Tulsa is like that, where it's like Tulsa, sister city, Nagamako, Japan. I don't know what it means, but you never seen that?
No, I need to travel more. How old are you? I actually, in high school, was on a track to go into medical school. Mm-hmm. And there was this big summer program that I went to at Boston University for like aspiring doctors, you know. And so I went to that, and somebody said in the middle of one of the seminars, which you hear a million times as an adult, but it was the first time I had heard it as a teenager. You know, they said, all of you are smart enough, all of you will work hard enough, or you wouldn't be in this program. But if there is anything else in the world that you want to do, do that.
Wow.
Because this is so hard. You know,
I've never heard that.
Yeah. And when I heard that, I was like, yeah, there's something else I want to do. And that's when it first clicked to me that I actually, when it was posed to me as an ultimatum kind of like that, I thought, you know, I really do want to try music. And
how old were you at that time?
I was 17 then. So I had never written a song, could not play an instrument. I mean, I could tinker.
Really?
Oh yeah. No. It was all singing and tracks at church. Mm-hmm. That was all I had done and whatever. So Belmont came onto my radar here in Nashville by a guy at my church. It told me about it, and I came up and visited and was like, this is what I want to do. You know, I want to try this. Of course, I had stars in my eyes. I thought I would go to music school, get a vocal degree.
You get a degree and a record deal at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. That labels are just like waiting for graduates to sign.
Yeah, like half of the graduation is made up from A&R guys.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Now, that happened a lot with Counting Crows for me. I wanted to be Adam Duritz. Did not work out for me.
Like you were just saying about getting the stars out of your eyes. I think it took me 5 years longer than it should have to realize that I wasn't Adam Duritz, or like trying to sing way higher out of my register.
Yeah.
And just killing my voice. And like I went to a vocal teacher to teach me to sing like that.
Wow.
I remember bringing in a couple records of people and being like, I want to get up to that.
Yeah.
Where I can sing so high and like that. And the lady was nice and tried to teach me, and it just wasn't working. And I was like, I'm doomed because I don't know what else to do, you know? And then thankfully I kind of realized that I could just do whatever I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But it's so silly. The dreams of our youth, you know? Mm. Let's just think about that for a little. You say... we're done. Did you say... Do you find you relate more to kind of powerful women singers? Like, if you hear that somewhere and you don't recognize it, are you more prone to, like, who is that? Yes. I want to get into that.
Absolutely. Like the first time I heard Nina Simone, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, who is this woman? What yeah. is she about? You know, and because it's not, she doesn't have a pretty voice.
No. She doesn't. Not even a little bit. But it is that kind of, it captures...
Oh my God.
Or captivates would be a better word.
Yeah. And she's like interpreting. She is feeling every moment of every mm-hmm. piano note and song and note she's singing, vocal note, whatever you call that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, artists like that, definitely. I can hear a million like people that aren't like that, and I can't think of one because it disinterests me.
Yeah.
Whoa.
just got a little pretentious in here. Yikes. Did you... So you said you didn't play an instrument or ever written a song. Yeah. What was the journey to get to the point where you could write a song? Did you pick up an instrument, or did you start writing just by singing and writing down things? Or
no, yeah, I picked up an acoustic guitar my freshman year of college because all the cool chicks played acoustic
right.
guitar.
Right.
I figured that yeah. out first semester. So I took a lesson, you know, one of my classes, and that was terrible. I was ridiculously bad. And so I was like, I'm quitting this. This is stupid. I'm a singer.
Right.
And then, but, I, you know, then you take what you learn later and just keep playing around with it and then yeah. figure it out. So that's how I learned to write songs, was with the guitar. But only recently have I started, like in the past 2 years, have I started writing away from an instrument because I was limited, you know.
Yeah.
But because I'm not a great guitar player. I was trying to fit my songs into what I could manage to play, you know. So I've tried in the past couple years to just start with no instrument, just singing the song that I want to sing, and mm-hmm. then, you know, trying to use the guitar to support that. It's been fun. That's a challenge. You want to always do something different, you know?
Yeah. That's interesting. That terrifies me, actually. I don't even know if I'd be able to do it. That'd be a good exercise, because I write so much on guitar.
Well, that... you're really good.
Well, I don't know what to say. You're right. Good point. End of that question.
Wow, we've closed this many times.
I know. That's right. So that's how I do it. I'm just looking for the compliment to me in every question.
Nice.
So when you met me, what was your top five favorite qualities? Do you remember when we met?
Yes, it was at that Rutledge show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I had heard, I knew Jason, your husband.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, he played with Andy before I moved here. He played with Andy
on a tour.
Came down to Arkansas
yes.
in Texas and... They played in, I think they played in Austin where Jason's from, and
yeah.
they came back up, and so I knew Jason, and then moving here, everybody just kept saying your name. But seriously, it was like, do you know Emily Deloach? It was
oh
like a name
gosh.
Drop thing. And by everybody, I mean like Andy and Allison.
Yeah.
But, and so I just knew you from there, but like, I would say stuff to them or whatever, and they're like, you get along with Emily really well. And so, and then we met at that Rella show, and it was weird how we kind of knew, I think we had inside jokes by the time we left.
Remember laughing
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But you laugh a lot. You're pretty jovial.
I know. Little Ella Osinga, she's always like, hey, Emily, why do you laugh so much? Why do you laugh all the time? In this cute, childlike, innocent way, she just is like, I've never seen somebody laugh
yeah.
so much. Why do you do that?
What specifically... The song The Lucky Ones, is. Can you share what that's about? Is that yeah. about something?
Yeah, it's when I was 18, I was in a car accident with my boyfriend at the time. And we had gone to the beach with his family, and we're on our way back, and we're on Interstate 65, a little south of Birmingham. And it was raining, and there were uneven lanes on the interstate, and we got into a car accident. We were like 45 minutes from home, and it was really bad. We spun... three times and flipped three times.
Mm.
And he actually died in the car accident.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's what the song's about. I do have another song called Almost Tried. It was on my first EP,
yeah.
which is about that same incident. And, but that was really fresh off of it. That was like maybe a year or two later. So that's like one perspective of the song, just like missing him. And
mm-hmm.
this is so horrible, like how am I gonna figure my life out, you know. And then, but then this one is 10 years later, looking back at it kind of in a different way. When I mentioned going through that hiatus of writing, I had just kind of moved, life had kind of taken its toll, you know, and I was going in a different way. And I was, so I sat down to write again, and I couldn't, I had nothing to say, you know, and I thought I had nothing to say. And so I wanted so badly to get away from the car accident because I felt like that had shaped a whole lot of my early music. And I thought, I need to do something different. I need to move on. I need to write about something else. And, but I tried and it was all just total crap. Because I'd been out of the habit for so long. So I thought, well, I tried for months and months to do it and just to no avail. So I was like, forget it. I was just up late one night and I'm just going to write about what I know how to write about. And so that's how that song came out. I just started and finished. It was one of those that you just start and finish in an hour, you know? Yeah. And I thought too, why am I shying away from this? Like I'm not embarrassed. It's a story that I would like to tell, you know? I want people to know about Wes and know like what happened. I shouldn't just like box it up and put it away.
When the night falls on the lucky ones and it welcomes them to sleep, I will still be here unraveling all the secrets that I keep. Oh. And in the stillness of the midnight hour, I can only hear the dream. And my heart and mind ignite a fire that is fueled by memories that I've chased every day since I was 18. I say good night and say
hello. Do you feel like that incident kind of was your identity for a little bit? Like in trying to separate yourself from like, this doesn't define me. Yes. It's just something that I went through.
Right. And the worst thing I can feel is when somebody feels sorry for me. Like I cannot stand that feeling. Mm-hmm. Like I'm fine. I am fine. Stop feeling sorry for me. So instead of like just dealing with it, you know, and like addressing that, I just would push it away. And exactly, I don't want to be I don't know. I just don't want that to be a whole picture. And it's not the whole picture.
No.
But that's what I get scared of, is that it would be the whole deal.
And what I don't know is how I remember. Every single nurse's name, but still I can't recall your face.
Well,
Emily,
thanks for coming on the show. This is really fun.
Thank you. I loved it. So, Emily.
And we had a good talk. So go wake the kids up, get them some Go-Gurt and a candy necklace, and enjoy my talk with Arthur Allgood. Let's get into this. You're not used to this, are you?
I'm not at all. This is awkward.
Are you not into talking about yourself?
Sure.
I think the little bit I know about you knows that you're not.
Yeah. Is this all on it? Yeah, great.
So, Arthur Allgood is in my house.
Yes.
And it is Allgood.
Yes, it's Allgood.
How do you
not
say
all it? Good or Allgood? Allgood.
Allgood?
Yes.
What was your childhood like with that, with a last name like that?
Troubling.
Constantly substitute teachers.
Yeah, well, actually,
first day of school.
Yeah, my first name was actually worse.
Really?
Yeah. I got a lot of the like Allie Bad and
that's
stuff
clever.
Like that. But the my first name was all like, there would always be a kid that would come up to me and go, so, written any books lately? Like,
I don't get
author?
It. Oh, oh my gosh.
I know, really? I know. It was, and it revealed how stupid they were.
My like, mind didn't even go to that.
I know, exactly. Well, I like.
Author.
But I know, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so.
Was Arthur the aardvark big when you were a kid?
I don't think so.
You know
I
what that is? Older.
Yeah, yeah. I get that more now as a substitute teacher when I go in.
Oh, there. Probably.
Yeah, they're like, you're on PBS. And like, no.
Are you an only child?
No, I have a brother.
Older brother?
Or younger. Younger. So, yeah, he's about a year and a half younger.
So. Okay. So, so when you people ask you where you're, like, where you're from, do you, what do you say? Do you still say Georgia? Wait, how old were you when you moved to?
Yeah, I'd only spent, like, you know, like, from when I was born until, like, four or so.
Okay.
You know, so, but all my family's down there, like both sides, like my dad's parents live kind of more south toward Florida. And then, I don't know, I have this kind of, I don't know, it's a weird thing when I actually go back to Georgia, it's kind of like, I feel like I'm going back to a life that I should have lived.
Oh, weird.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I start saying, like talking really, I mean, give me an hour or so with my aunt and I'm like,
you're real,
ready to get
real
the tractor and
yeah.
go, you know, so.
What other influences kind of came in?
Well, I started going to Cornerstone Festival mm-hmm. up in Illinois, and so that was really good. That kind of opened my eyes to all this other stuff, and I guess probably one of the most formative experiences was seeing Pedro the Lion. I think it was right when It's Hard to Find a Friend
mm-hmm.
came out, and I just, like, never had seen anybody play music, like, I just, like, really, really, really registered with me. I mean, I was like, man.
Me too.
This is so good. There was just something so honest and real, and it wasn't flashy, and it was just, you know, electric guitar and drums and bass, and it was kind of really simple, and but mm-hmm. it was just so powerful to me. And I just remember seeing them and thinking, man, I think I want to try to do something, I mean, not like that, but I, like, it just made me aware of maybe a type of or style of music that was, it's like, yeah, that would fit. I don't think I'm a ska person, but that
yeah.
would.
Definitely. You know. I remember hearing it and not having a frame of reference for it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I've ever heard anything like this.
And yeah.
This guy isn't a great singer.
Yeah.
And he's not, as far as great singers go.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, he's one of my favorite vocalists. I still yeah. love his voice
yeah.
Because of the authentic quality of it.
Yeah.
But in there maybe three chords to these songs, but for mm-hmm. some there was something there. I agree.
Yeah.
There was something there that I was like, I've never heard this before, and I have to keep listening to this.
Yeah, yeah. I think he has a gift. I mean, it's the word to me is
yeah.
Honestly, to me, I think he'll 20 years, 30 years. I think we'll be talking about him.
As oh yeah.
One of the, he's one of the best. Probably living songwriters we have.
No, I think they'll do it. And there are a lot of people who I look up to as great performers and songwriters who hate him. You know, they're yeah. just like, I don't get it. And,
yeah.
and that's fine too.
Yeah.
And for a long time, I was like, no, you have to love.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That didn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
But I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
Who else kind of grabbed you like that?
Because
I found when you open doors, like when I opened
yeah.
the Pedro door,
yeah.
that was kind of the first, I was all ska punk and like a
yeah.
little bit more crunchy guitar type.
Yeah.
Like pop rock stuff, and then
yeah.
when I opened that door, I found that a bunch of artists
oh, yeah.
came after.
Yeah,
was that the same way with you?
Yeah. And so it was this band, Vigilantes of Love.
They okay. were actually, Bill Maloney.
Yeah, Bill Maloney is probably my biggest influence.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a lot of why I recorded with Kenny.
Did he work with him?
Yeah, he was in Vigilantes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I knew the name. I didn't
yeah.
know exactly what he.
Yeah.
What he, oh wow!
Yeah, he was with them for like three or four records. Like,
mm-hmm.
so I'd known the name, and Bill is just kind of like, he's kind of one of those songwriters like you either love him or you. I mean, he doesn't have the best voice.
But, I personally
yeah.
never.
Yeah,
his voice was enough to kind of keep me away.
Yeah,
it was just too
yeah.
weird or whatever
yeah.
it was.
It is weird. I don't know. Like his writing just floored me, and it was one of the first musicians. Or bands that I'm like, when I first, there was one song that I really liked, but the rest of it, I was like, I don't know about this, you know?
But, like, because I like that song so much, mm-hmm. I almost literally forced myself to listen to the rest of the stuff.
Like, there's something here, and
yeah,
listen, I know Arthur, it. Yeah. Me, you're going to get into it.
Yeah, and it's like, I was like, I don't know what it is, but I feel like I need to like this,
yeah.
You know? And it was in that process it's like I got through a wall after a certain point, and then everything of his opened up, and I'm like, holy crap, like... It just floored me. So, yeah, so I really got into him. He, you know, like, I always think, like, he's kind of like the guy that taught me how to songwrite. Like, at that point, I was, like, realized that I wanted to actually write songs, like, mm-hmm. good ones. And they kind of set the bar for me. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what I want to do. And this is the level that they're doing it. And I really want to try to write at that level. Dark beside the houses, but none of them were hers. Followed to her front door, all the way to Illinois. Treasure there, I found it, far away from sea and sand. Farmer's daughter, she had been in the corn, I kissed her. Boys of bullies, threats, thinking how am I gonna make it? If I can't make her smile, I'm gonna make her smile. I'm gonna make her smile. The days and age are just a while. How am I gonna make it?
Are you a patient guy? Because that takes a lot of patience. Sometimes when
I don't know, that's a hard question to ask. It's like asking if you're humble. Like,
hell, well, are you?
Yeah, I am. I'm humble.
Are you a humble guy?
I don't know. I have patience with something. With stuff like this. Like, if you ask my wife, she would probably say that I'm not.
Well, we all have those tendencies to not be and to be selfish, yeah. and to try to push things.
Yeah,
but to be a songwriter, like especially. Knowing your work, especially this recent album, and then just talking to you, it seems like you have a patience to or more of a respect for the process, I guess, than yeah. patience. Like you're like, yeah, the songs need to come out the way they need to come out. Like I can't force them to become this kind of glob of something that isn't me.
Yeah,
you know, like there's no point. Like just saying, there's no point if it's not. Yeah. If it's not personal or if it doesn't come from a personal place. Because there are a lot of people who write stuff that it doesn't, and it's not the songs you remember.
Yeah.
You know, really.
Yeah. So. Well, I just feel like if you don't connect it to it as the writer, then what... I mean, really, what is the point? One of the, to me, the universal things that we all experience is pain or sorrow. And I feel like if you're aware of the measure of sorrow that you experience in life, and you're honest with yourself about that, and as a songwriter, I let that show. I, honestly, to me, like, sorrow is seems more of a constant than maybe, like, joy,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so it's, yeah. like, I really feel like, I mean, I get that I'm broken, and that I'm not perfect, and that life stinks sometimes, and stuff mm-hmm. like that. So it's, like, and so many other people go through so much that's, worse and horrible things that happen in life, and it's hard to, like, I can't say, well, I know what you're going through, or, and you know, I can't do that, but I can start with a measure of sorrow that's in my own heart and realize that there's a root in everyone's sorrow that's the same. Everyone has the beginnings of pain or sorrow, whatever you want to call it, and it's all common. And I feel like if you are honest with yourself about that, then somehow, mysteriously, somebody that's been through something so much worse can relate to what you're saying because you're, like, talking about that same thing.
Yeah, was this one of those things where you're in a small town and music instruments were around, so it was just kind of like, well, this is another thing to yeah. do so we don't get bored? Or
yeah, I mean, my dad had a pretty big record collection, and, like, even at my great-grandma's house, we would go, even though it was, like, Lawrence Welk, and yeah. not really oh, necessarily yeah. stuff that I
But when you're a kid,
but when you're a kid, it's like, this is great. Let's
dance. Anything. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I would just soak that all up. You know, the big band, the old country, the new country. I mean, any kind of music was good. And then of course, like growing up in church and stuff too. Like that was an influence. Both my parents sing, and my mom was even in like a girl group for a little bit. But like choir, like show choir, like Glee.
Yeah.
Our show choir didn't do stuff quite as, you know, I don't know.
You know that's not a documentary, edge. Right? That's not real.
No.
Did I just shatter your world right now?
Oh my gosh.
That's not the way it is. That's not the way it is.
Yeah, definitely rocked the show choir scene. Mm-hmm. That's real big in Indiana as well. And so it was just like a constant involvement. Mm-hmm. And stuff. So it was always around, but it wasn't a big thing to go to shows and stuff, except for at the county fair.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. We have one of the largest county fairs, and that was where I saw majority of my favorite country singers.
Who did you see? Give us a list.
Okay, I saw Faith Hill when she was first coming on the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Martina McBride, you know, whoa. Crazy. I saw Diamond Rio. I loved some Diamond Rio back in the day. I mean,
who didn't?
Those harmonies.
Yeah, I didn't. Really? That too. But I'm just going with it.
Yeah. I also saw Creedence Clearwater, minus John Fogerty.
Yeah.
It was with a guy who kind of took like over, but he sounded exactly like.
Yeah, they had like a. There's a crazy story around that.
Yeah.
That I read on Wikipedia.
It's gotta be true then.
Yeah, it's gotta be. They don't just throw that out there. That's all tested.
Right, right. Oh man.
Wow, that's awesome. Creedence.
Creedence Clearwater. Yeah, it was.
Playing the hits?
Totally. Yeah. My brother took me, and it was really
fun. Playing
a little
Bad Moon Rising? Down on the corner?
All the time. Yeah, it was great.
Fortunate Son?
Yeah.
Is that the name of that song?
Yeah. Fortunate Son. Yeah. So that's where I saw a lot of my celebrity influences. Ooh.
If
I may.
Bigger
names that we didn't get otherwise. Otherwise, we'd have to go to like South Bend or some of these larger cities. And we just didn't really travel that much. We kind of stuck to home. And
yeah. How far was the fair from your town?
The fair was like 15 minutes. Okay. 20 minutes.
So that was like kind of big deal.
Yeah. That was like the big thing to do in the summertime.
Mm. How long was that?
Too. The fair?
2 weeks?
Or
something like that.
I think it's over a week. I know. Maybe close to two, but I don't think
we never did the fair
weeks.
Thing. I remember the fair coming, but there was never entertainment attached to it other than the entertainment you get from looking at people who go to the fair. the people who will attend the fair is entertainment on its own.
Yes.
But I don't really remember there being much of that. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, and our choir would perform there, like when I was in elementary school, do the talent shows.
So did you tell people you open for CCR? Because you technically sort of, you bend the truth a little bit?
I should. I had never thought of it that way, but I definitely should.
It might have got you a little bit more play in middle school.
I think so.
And that's what middle school kids are looking for, I think.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about that? That maybe, like, the other people wrote... Because, I mean, there's only so many notes.
And that's true, yeah.
That other people could have possibly written the same song.
Oh, for sure.
And then been... Because I've done that before where I've just come up with ideas for songs and then seen it play out somewhere else. I'm like, oh, that's almost the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little off track there.
That's okay.
Was there just kind of this need? Did you know when you were in college that you were kind of... Moved to Nashville and kind of pursue a job here, or was it just kind of like,
no,
you didn't really know, and this is just kind of like a thing you were trying, or
the idea of Nashville didn't really come until my senior year. I had to do an internship to kind of wrap up my degree, and I knew I wasn't ready for New York or LA or some of those larger cities. I mean, I'm coming from rural Indiana, total small town, you know.
You couldn't intern at the stage at the fair?
I suppose I could have. I mean,
I don't know. That seems pretty legit. CCR, Martina McBride.
Seriously, they knew what they were doing. But no, I think Nashville just seemed like the next step as far as I knew. There was other students that had kind of moved down here that really liked it, mm-hmm. and I hadn't really even visited at all when I moved down here. I moved a week after graduating and started my internship and.
Because usually people will come and kind of test drive the place.
No, not at all. I was just like, okay, this is
it. I'm doing it.
I'm going.
One outfit forever. Yeah. Yes. That's that's pretty brave, I feel like.
Totally unlike me. Totally. I would never be that.
Assertive?
Assertive yeah. and
just. Well, you are stubborn, so.
I am stubborn, so I was like digging my heels in.
That's right. You know?
My mom apparently says that I said I was moving to Nashville when I was like 8. Apparently, right during the music phase. So maybe it all connects somewhere.
Did you say when you got in trouble, you're like, I'm moving to Nashville, and run to your room and slam the door?
Yes, I did.
But your mom is like a, she could see the future, and she was like, yes, you will. Like,
they didn't want me to come. I mean, really? They wanted me to come and. I mean,
why do your parents hate you? Let's talk about that. Let's just ship this completely.
Oh, that is nobody's not listening. It at all. No, they. I mean, a lot of my family all live within a 30-minute drive radius, and so I was the first one to kind of fly the coop in a way, you know, other than college, leaving.
Yeah,
college.
Right.
Yeah, and on both sides of my family, really, a lot of them still live in Indiana and Michigan. So,
so moving here, was there just kind of a? Did you think that you would perform? Or was it just like, I'm just going to be in the music business?
I wanted to give the business a fair go. I wanted to kind of try that out, probably because I was scared to be a performer.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of pressure with that, and especially with my own songs, performing those. I mean, the first shows I did in college, I was scared to death, you know?
Were they good? Were they well attended?
I mean, I had my college friends, yeah.
Yeah, I find those first shows are always a good buffer because people will come and see you because you're you, not because of...
Right, exactly. But I didn't see it as that. Mm. I still saw it as like, oh my goodness, this is my first show.
Yeah.
What am I going to do?
Yeah.
I have to talk? Oh, stage
I know, you never think about
that. It's the most terrifying thing.
Yeah. When you're practicing, you're like, you never think about the space in between.
No, never. Never.
And then you always give overly long explanations of your songs that don't really... And then you're like, that's not really what this is about. I don't...
Like, why am I sharing
Oh my
these
gosh,
things?
First shows are... It was weird, because for me, like, I thought I was rocking it. I was like, this is what shows go, because all the shows that I played early on, I had seen all these kind of, like, storytellers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Those are the first, like, shows, quote-unquote, that I saw.
Right.
Where they were on television.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, that's what you do. You just get up there, and you talk, and everybody's just completely enamored, and they love it. And they yell out songs, even though, like, I've never played a show before. Right. You know. It's so weird.
It is.
Because it really is, it takes this leap of faith that you don't
mm-hmm.
really, you don't know really what's going to happen. It's
yeah. Kinda... Yeah. And some people enjoy the banter and others are like, just play the song.
Yeah.
You know, and so you never know kind of what the audience is going to want.
Yeah. It's true.
And so you kind of, it's always, which is good because it makes every show different. So you don't have some like planned routine and so you can kind of go off the cuff, which is good, but also really scary because.
Oh, yeah.
I've said some really dumb stuff on stage.
I think the most dumb things that I've said in life have been on stage.
Which is through always a microphone. The best time for that to
Yes, through a microphone, through many people, and most times was recorded.
Oh, awesome.
And sent to me. So I could have it forever. And no,
YouTube.
It's
I
hanging on the wall.
I'm glad YouTube Ugh. Wasn't popular in college.
Oh my gosh.
There
was something on TV the other day, because I feel like every other week there's something about like teens being cyberbullied or something, but like,
oh yeah,
oh my gosh, I'm so glad I did not grow up in a time when the internet existed. That really dates me.
I mean, it did,
but
kind of.
It was there, but like, but I was out of high school before social networking was took off. Like,
oh, me too.
Oh my gosh, I really barely missed it in a way.
Oh yeah.
And but it's really weird. I can't imagine being now and like people.
Oh yeah, and kids who are like 9 having cell phones.
Oh
and,
my gosh!
I mean,
take it away from them. Do not give them that.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
We're so old.
Well, that does it for that walk down memory lane. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode. If you would like to write into the podcast, you could do so by emailing whowritesthestuffpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet @whowritespod. On Twitter, of course, and Instagram, and facebook.com/whowritesthisstuff. We are all over the internet. Gosh, that's a mouthful. So, thank you for listening. I'm Nick Flora. for 4 years and four more hopefully to come. Go do something creative.